Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brandel, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We are supposed to be interviewing today Frank Let Me Be Me De Bruin, who is from the Netherlands. Frank is a friend of Franz Dow, former 27-year warden, who right now is on a call with Ukraine and is going to be finding Frank De Bruin to come on the show. One of the things that he's going to be talking about is both his negative and his positive experiences resulting in his decision to ultimately write a book. He's had quite a few experiences in many areas in the countries of the Netherlands and elsewhere. So Frank, I don't know what he is doing right now. He may have forgotten, and I am trying to find out. Here he is now. He is on the show with us now. So everyone, I want to introduce Frank De Bruin, and he is going to talk a little bit about himself before he gets into the show itself, about his experiences and his knowledge. So Frank, are you on with us?
Yes, I am. I'm so sorry that I totally forgot because I was still sleeping.
Well, you know, there's so much going on in the world today that everyone's having problems in remembering some of the things that they need to do. But Frank, if you can introduce yourself to the audience, let them know a little bit about yourself and how it became Let Me Be Me, Frank De Bruin.
Yeah, Let Me Be Frank. Yes. Hello, everybody. Everybody who's listening, my name is Frank De Bruin. That's the way we pronounce it in my silly Dutch language. But Frank De Bruin is accurate. My age is 49. I'm heading towards 50 next year of March. I am a father of two loving children of 21 and 22 years old, a girl and a boy. And I live in the city of Nijmegen in the Netherlands. That's a small town near the border of Germany. And at this moment, the reason that I totally forgot is that lately I work as night shift security in a shelter where people live who are addicted to drugs and alcohol.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And homeless people also. So that's what I'm doing right now. I'm the writer, the author of a book, Achter de Tralies Schijnt de Zon, Behind the Bars the Sun Will Shine. And next year there will be a new version, a new extended version being published by a new publisher, because the old one, they went bankrupt, unfortunately. Yeah. And so that's a short introduction of who I am and what I do.
Can you tell us again, Frank, and it's De Bruin, can you
yes.
tell us again the name of your book and how you came to decide to write this book?
Yeah, that's a nice story, because when I was in the year of 2010, I got in financial problems because my former work as a casino dealer, I worked at Holland Casinos as a casino dealer behind the roulette, blackjack and poker tables. And when they fired me because I had a long stay, a long sick absence because of my divorce, I had the care of my two children plus their older brother, which I adopted. And so I had three children to take care of. I was divorced. I had a lot of drama and stress because the mother of the children is somebody who was diagnosed with borderline personal disorder with problems. And so it was a very hard time, and I had to stay home to take care of my children and not to lose my, lose my mind. So then I stayed home for a long time, and they didn't approve that, and they wanted me to leave. And then I got in financial problems, and then I took back my former busyness, actually, as a gigolo. A gigolo is a guy. Well, maybe the listeners, they know the movie from Roy Schneider, Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo. And that's actually a comedy. But a gigolo is actually a male prostitute who goes out with rich women, and he gets paid for being close to them, to say that very properly.
Many people are aware of what gigolos are like, but so how did you actually come to write the book, though, Frank? Did you have an experience of some other sort? Your years, and I was going to say we have a caller, but they dropped. Okay, go ahead and please explain to the audience.
Well, because of that gigolo busyness, I was very well known in my country. Because I wrote an article about it in a ladies' magazine, and the article was called "A Diary of a Gigolo," and because of that, I was very popular, and a lot of people outside the Netherlands also called me for my company. And one day, I was called for two Dutch ladies who were having a sort of a business vacation in South America. They were busy. Their business was fashion, and they were traveling around the South of America to find new cloths and fabric. And they wanted to end their business vacation, with a date with my person. So I went there. They paid for the trip, and on the way back, I was confronted with the airport police because they thought that I was trafficking drugs. So they took me to the hospital, took some X-rays and everything, and when they saw that I was I was clean, and I had nothing on me and nothing in me. Also, my baggage was taken care of. They made their apologies and put me on the plane. But while I was sitting in the plane, that flight was a night flight. Afterwards, I found out that there were 13 drug traffickers sitting inside that plane who all swallowed those bullets of cocaine. One of the persons, I expect, because that's my theory, one of the persons must have been scared because they reported while we were flying, they reported that once we were landing in Italy, in Milan, they would have a 100% control checkup for drug trafficking. And some people must have been scared, and some of them, they let out those things which they have swallowed. And because it, you poop them out, actually. And so most people, they won't eat them again. And so they put it in a plastic vomit bag. And they just put it inside somebody else's baggage or maybe their jacket. And in this case, it was my bag, which they put it in. And I wasn't aware of that. So when I walked to the checkup, and I gave my bag, they immediately found that the bag, and they asked me, what is this? I said, yeah, I can see what it is, and I know it's suspicious, but it's not mine. Somebody else must have put it there. And if you want to be sure, just run a DNA test, and you will find out it's not from my body, because I was already checked up in Peru. And they said, yeah, we will do that. But a long story short, 3 years later, I could return home. And during that detention, I got a lot of mail, because all the women and not only women, also the people who were reading my column and my article in the magazine, because I kept on writing it while I was behind bars. And not for a long time, because, I don't have that much to write about if you're not being busy as a gigolo no more. But, there was a lot of media attention. And because of that, I received a lot of mail every day, sometimes maybe 20 letters a day. And one of the people who was writing me, she sent me a book. She sent me a book about a Moroccan guy who had also experienced quite the same thing. He went to Morocco for his fruit company, and in the truck of his fruit company, which he was driving, they found 80 kilos of hashish. So that was not his, of course. There was somebody who was trying to put it inside his truck so he could bring it to Holland without him even knowing it. And so the guy was detained for 4 years in Morocco while he was innocent. And while reading that book, I was thinking about, hey, this just looks like my story, because it's just another character. And the location is different between Italy and Morocco. But further on, it's quite the same story. And then I thought, hey, wait, if he can do this, then I can also write a book, because I want my family, my children, and everybody who's doubting me, I want them to know how the story really happens. So that idea was set in my mind. And once I was released, I started writing, and the rest is history.
We have a lot of that in the United States, wrongful convictions and mistaken identities and things like that. So I can understand what you mean when you talk about your experiences. And can you just tell us a little bit about your experience while incarcerated? The treatment you got, the judgmental attitudes that people have towards you?
Yeah, that was very raw for me, because you must understand, I never condemn any other people, because I know that you cannot judge other people unless you are perfect, and nobody is perfect, and only God can judge us. So I never judge other people. But while I was sitting there in that cell, well, the first thing that I experienced was that they cuffed me. When they cuffed me, they put a line on my handcuffs, and they were walking around with me over the airport like a dog, so everybody could see that there was somebody who was arrested, and they were just humiliating me that way. And it felt so bad. So at that time, I could, we say in Holland, we say we could die a thousand deaths, but at that time I felt so bad, but I knew I was innocent. Then they let me at the airport for 3 days in one cell, and after a day or two, they never came to ask me if I wanted to take a shower or something. And I started to smell myself, so I wanted to take a shower, and I asked for a shower, and they took me to a place where I could shower. And they were looking at me while I was taking a shower. So that was also very humiliating. And afterwards, you expect at least that you get a towel. But they didn't give me a towel. They gave me a piece of paper, you know, those kind of paper what you have on the when you go to the doctor and they have the bench where you can lie on. They had some roll with the paper which they cover the bank with, you know.
Yes.
And that doesn't even absorb anything. So they give me a piece of paper. So I actually kind of wet, put back on my smelly clothes. And actually, they didn't have any use that way that I took a shower, because I still felt dirty as like a dog. And once they put me in the real jail, I went to the doctor because he had to examine me. And in that 3 days, I lost weight of 8 kilograms. Just because of the stress and just because of my head and my physically, I was so fucked up that, sorry for my language,
that's okay.
That I lost so much weight just because of the stress and not be able to eat or drink. And that was the moment that I really broke down. So yeah, they put me in an isolation cell. I didn't even was aware of that, because I never been in any prison. So I just assumed this is how prison is. And yeah, they put me in a cell.
How long did they have you in solitary?
2 weeks. And I actually kind of liked it, because it was so quiet. And there was a priest. He was visiting me every week, and he brought me some pens and some writing paper so I could write. He gave me some stamps, and so that made me able to write my family. Because the thing that I forgot to mention is that my family thought that I was dead, because the embassy wasn't informed. So when I didn't come back, they thought, hey, he should have been back at the airport right now. So they started calling me, but my phone was taken from me and has been put out. So then they start to panic, of course. I can just imagine if my son doesn't call me back, or his phone is off and I haven't heard from him in 2 or 3 days, I start to get worried. So they call the police and they report me as a missing person. After 3 or 4 days, if you don't hear anything about a person, then you start to worry about if he's still alive or not. 2.5 weeks, they didn't hear anything of me, and I was. They broadcasted my photo on television at a program. It's called Transfermis. That means missing persons, you know, something like that. So everybody who knew me seen my face, and everybody who was living in Holland and who was acquainted with me, they all thought I was dead. until my mother and my sister received a letter which I wrote. And that was very double, because they were so happy that I was still alive, but at the same time they found out that I was detained, and I there was not a chance of getting out very, very soon.
You know, you mentioned something I really want to reiterate as well, is that when people are arrested, when people are put in prison, families become withdrawn, not intentionally, not personally, but it's coming from the prison itself, the administration. And I think it's important, as they talk about now, for the incarcerated and their families to remain together. But you had mentioned how you felt dirty and you felt like you really needed to take a shower. And mm-hmm. I want to ask you something on that, because there's a lot of people who are forced to double cell with other prisoners.
Yeah.
And this is a major issue, because there are prisoners that don't think like you. They are not. Their hygiene is terrible. They're not clean, and they want to be either single-celled, kept to themselves so that they don't have to be around that kind of hygiene, or they want that privacy. So what are your thoughts on that, Frank? And did you have to experience that at all?
Oh, wow. I didn't even experience double cell. I was put in a cell first with five or six people. None of them spoke English or a language that I know, because I speak English. I spoke German all my life already, because that's what we are getting taught here. And my dad is half German, so I could already speak German when I was a little kid, and in English, of course. But they only spoke Spanish or Italian. And I've been in cells up to 25 persons. Mm. And imagine, there's 25 persons, all of different cultures or traditions, and they all have their different ways of personal hygiene. And there's 25 persons who want to watch a program on TV, but there's just one TV. Just imagine the mayhem. What you have there. Wow.
So how are you able to correspond with them or relate to them, communicate with them, if everyone's speaking a language you didn't understand?
Allora, ora sto parlando italiano come italiano stessi. I learned the language within 6 weeks.
Wow.
I spoke the language in such a short while. The thing is, there in Italy, every movie, right now on Netflix, you can watch a Spanish movie, but you can choose the language, because they, how we say that, they synchronize those movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something. In Italy, they synchronize all the movies in Italian. So when there was a movie which I've seen a lot, I knew, of course, the things they were saying. And then I listened very carefully. Well, I must explain that I have a thing with languages. I've always been a very quick learner. And so I just listen. And step by step, I started to learn the language even more. I learned to read, and now I can read and write and speak. And even though, for example, when I say, yes, I come from the Netherlands, but now I learn to speak Italian, and I say, sono nato in Olanda, ma ora ho imparato la lingua italiana quando sono stato lì. Then, for me, it's like I can switch easily to English, to Italian, to German.
Ich spreche sehr gut
Deutsch. That made me a richer person. So, like I said the other day, the last week, my downfall, it was so hard on me, and it hurts me actually to say this, but I really, really considered to kill myself, and because I thought I can never stay here for such a long time, because sometimes it was so hard when I was dreaming, and I always dream. Just now I was sleeping because I had to work again tonight, And Franz, he called me. He said, "Hey, she's waiting for you." He said, "Oh, it's already Wednesday. My sense of time is a little lost." So when I'm dreaming, I always dream very vivid. And in my dreams, it felt so as if I was really there. They call it lucid dreams, right? And then I was dreaming about me running through the forest with my kids, being happy and being outside and free. And then suddenly my eyes opened and I was looking at the dirty walls, you know, with fungus and yeah, the paint is falling off. And then I thought, oh, wow, shit, I'm still here in this hellhole. I'm still in this nightmare. And wait, how long I still have to stay here? Oh, wow, 700 days. So then, yeah, it's very hard if you see that, yeah, being locked up 24 hours a day takes very, it crawls, you know, like, the time seems to stand still sometimes. And then 700 days is very long. But just imagine that 3 years is not even that long. I know people who have been incarcerated for 12, 18 years.
Yes. And unfortunately, in this country, yeah, they have life without parole sentencing. They have life sentences. They have death row. And what you're talking about, I'm glad you're bringing these things up, because what you're talking about with the dirty walls, the mold and the mildew, and these putting people in prison, especially in your situation, a wrongfully convicted person, but putting anyone in prison is supposed to be correction, not deterioration. And unfortunately, what happens is when these people go to prison for a crime that they allegedly had committed, or even those that are wrongfully convicted, they have to live in, like you say, hell holes. You know, this is not rehabilitating them. This is making them even worse. So I'm glad you're talking about a lot of these things. And as far as suicide, we have in this country, we have a high rate of suicide, and we just had a suicide in Massachusetts this past week, and it happens all the time, and something needs to be done. And I'm wondering, where are the human rights organizations if our legislative members are not going to put a stop to it? Our government is not doing anything about it. It's as though they don't care, and that's sad because they're supposed to be corrected, not deteriorated. Yeah. Destroyed.
Yeah, I agree. But even the prisons, and America is a good example of what you just told. But in Asia, for example, like Thailand, the punishment over there is even worse. If they catch you, maybe even with 1 gram of cocaine, they also, they used to give you death, or they just leave you to die in prison for the rest of your life. And also in Turkey, Greece, those countries in the south of Europe, it's even worse. Holland is not so bad, actually. if I compare it to where I have been, I thought, wow, I managed so long to, well, actually kind of long to be in those bad situations. But I got to tell you that the guards in Italy, they weren't so bad, because they're just part of the system. And once they found out what kind of character I had and personality I was, they were very caring to me. Because there was one day that I broke down in front of them. Of course, they saw me like a criminal. And once they called me to go to the warden, huh? So he had a letter in front of him, and he said, and there were a lot of guards standing around him, and I was so intimidated. So he said, "De Bruin," that's what they call me. My name is the bruin is actually the color brown, you know, so that's just the Dutch way of pronouncing it. But my name is actually, if you translate it, is Frank Brown. And he said, De Bruin, what is this? I said, yeah, it's a letter. Can't you tell? I was very annoyed by him. And he said, yeah, what's inside? I assume it's a letter that it's inside. So what are you doing here? He said, yeah, but there's no sender written on the envelope. I said, yeah, how can I help that? I don't know what you want from me right now. He said, yeah, well, what's inside here? Can it be drugs or maybe anthrax or maybe it's a bomb? I said, well, can I go or just open the letter? Because, I don't know what you're doing. So he opened the letter very, very slowly. And once he opened and then he pulled the letter outside, I saw a drawn elephant. And that was the moment that I found out it's my child.
Yes.
And right now I get emotional.
Yeah.
Because at that time I was like, oh shit, this is my child. He's aware of the fact that his dad is in prison. And I started to cry and I fell on the ground and I couldn't stop crying. And I saw the guards, they looked like, oh, what happened? What's going on? And then they saw the human that I was, actually. One of the guards, a big guy, he pulled me up. He said, De Bruin, come, I will take care of you. He brought me to the infirmaria, the doctor's department, and they gave me a shot to a tranquilizer, and they brought me back in the cell. When I woke up the next day, 24 hours later, he went to my door and he said, me and my colleagues, we have seen that you are really innocent, because a person who has done such things or such crime which he is convicted for, he would never respond like this. He said, when you came in, you were so quiet and so peaceful, and so we thought you were cold-blooded, you know, and now we saw the pain that you just you expressed, and wow, it really hit me, he said. And since then, in that prison, which also was declared to be inhumane by the Court of Human Rights of Strasbourg, they treated me better than before. They put me on a list. Every guard could nominate a certain prisoner who he wanted to be in the half open section, so I would have more freedom and I was able to work. And normally you have to be there for at least a year if you go there, and within half a year they put me already there. And so that was actually kind of nice.
It's stories like yours. I wish that people would have you come to them and speak at their schools, their universities, their law schools, you know, that they would have you speak on stories like that, even on television, because there are people in prison who, when they are as innocent and as caring as you are, and there are other people in prison around the world like that, but there are some that correctional officers don't respect. They look for the hardcore, the tough ones, so that they can have them do their work for them. If they have a disliking for a prisoner, they can have these hardcore criminals do their job in destroying that other person. But then there's so many like yourself where guards actually see the humanity in them and know that they're really good people. They're not as bad as the public seems to think. In your situation, that must have been heartbreaking. As soon as you saw the elephant, I picked up on it right away when you said an elephant on the picture and you had mentioned your children. That must have been very heartbreaking.
Yeah, still is. I can be honest about this. Every time, and I'm already out for 10 years right now. And my children, back at that time, they were 9 and 10 years old. Right now, they are 21 and 22. And every time when I talk about this, I feel as if it gets my throat, you know, and it makes my eyes wet. It never leaves. It's something that's so carved in my soul, actually. And yeah.
Were you ever actually exonerated of that? Were you ever able to prove your innocence? Or were you just released when the time came?
Yeah, no. That's a nice question. Let me tell you. I knew. I told when I was at the airport. I told them. I said, listen, I am already checked in the land of Peru, in Lima. You only have to call the airport over there, ask the airport police if there was a guy whose name is Frank Brown and if he was checked for carrying drugs with him. And they will tell you, yes, we have checked him and he was, you know, the photos were negative. Maybe they still had the photos. And I explained this all to them because that would be the proof, right?
Yeah.
And of course, I asked for some kind of a, I don't know for sure, but I guess that if those bullets of cocaine have been inside your body and it comes outside your butthole, some way they can have a DNA test or something like that, which proves if it's yours or not. Well, they didn't do that. And after a while, I can't believe that the pictures that they make, they only keep the pictures who are positive, which they can prove. Look, you see those things inside? Those are the things that they've swallowed. So this is the proof that he has been carrying those drugs. So then they can use that as proof. But if it's of a negative photo, which they cannot see if there's something inside, it's not any use. It has not any use. So they probably just throw him away the same day. So the only proof there was already being destroyed. And then there's nothing left to prove no more. So this is what happened. 1.5 months after I was sentenced, and I was already... I was still convinced that I could be released before Christmas, because I was detained at the 14th of November. And I thought, well, they have 1.5 months to prove my innocence, and then at least I can be with my family with Christmas. Yeah, I had to think again, because then the attorney came. My lawyer came and I asked him, why does it take so long for those DNA tests to run? He said, I don't know what you're talking about, because that has never been done. I said, what? So how can I prove my innocence then? He said, I don't know. I think that's impossible now. And then that was that I was, you know, I felt the earth beneath my feet just vanish, and I was like, "What?" That was the time that I was aware of the fact that I had to stay there for 5 years. He told me 5 years, but he made a deal. He said, "Well, I can talk to the magistrate," and he came back another day and he said, "Well, we can bring it back to 3 years, but then you have to, confess that you did it." I said, "Well, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to confess that I did something that I didn't do." He said, "Yeah, but what options do you have?" I said, "Yeah, tell me." He said, "Well, I tell you, if you want me to prove your innocence, which is, it's almost impossible. Of course, I need more money, he said. And I was like, you son of a bitch. You want to get rich of me. And I just refused for my family to pay for my bullshit.
We have lawyers like that in this country too. Believe me, we have lawyers that will scam you. They'll visit a prisoner one time and charge you thousands. And what they do now is some of them work in pairs so that they can justify their thousands of dollars between emails going back and forth between them, the lawyers, instead of
the
client.
It's very bad. Getting rich out of people's misery. And then, I told them no. Then, fuck it. I said, I'm sorry. I said, well, what's the best option? He said, what do you care? He said, you just have to say that you did it. And then they bring it back to 3 years. And then maybe after 2 years, you can go back to Holland. I said, what? You really telling me now that I have to stay here in this country for 2 years? I can hardly stay here for more than a month. But yeah, after a while, everything, gets used to it. And now, I made a lot of friends over there. Everybody respects you if you don't judge them. So that's very important to, I keep on telling other people that, never judge other people. And what you just mentioned, Leon, is that is one of my biggest dreams. If I could only, because right now here in my country, I'm invited sometimes in prisons and detention centers, also for the juvenile delinquents, and then I talk about this my story. I talk about my experiences. And the 18th of January, I'm going to The Hague, is the capital of Holland. And there, I'm going to explain to the buyers of the people who buy all the groceries and shopping items that the prisoners can buy.
Mm-hmm.
Those people, they buy a lot of things for the prison and the prison employees and the prisoners inside. And there's a big group of people who are busy with that, doing that. But they don't know the group actually of where they're working for. So there's some organization who wants me to explain to the people what the people, how it's like. I want them to see a prisoner, an ex-prisoner, standing in front of them who is telling them what we do during the day in prison, so they can be more aware of the people that they're working for, actually, because they're just doing their job, but they have no clue who they are working for who they are working for. And so I want them to be more aware of the people and not seeing them as criminals or as the felony they are or they did. Or the criminal delict. I just want them to see that they're just working for people in distress, people who are, like you told yourself, that who are living actually in a true hell. There's hell on earth actually, And I also think that it can be different because in Finland, in Scandinavia, for example, the correctional centers there are much different, more humane. They have outside in the wide forest-like countryside. They have small houses on that area with maybe 6 to 10 prisoners living there, and they cannot escape because it's all, you know, the area is being also restricted, but it feels like they are outside, they are free, but they're still being restricted in some kind of outside prison. And they can chop wood outside, they work, and they can watch TV. There's a shop, there's even a bar, you know, where they can hang out. And but they're still inside some kind of a correctional center, you know? So it feels much more like normal life. They only cannot see their friends, and that's all what they're being hidden from. So that is something that I really wish for the world to be more, you know, more like that. Because a lot of people, yeah, you see the most dark side of the world when you are in prison. I saw it, and even in Italy, in the third prison which they brought me, that was in the capital, Rome, they almost leave me to die over there. Because it didn't give me my medicine. I have asthma, and I developed a lung infection, and then I had fever, a high fever for almost 4 days, and I thought, oh, this is the end. I'm going to die right now, just before they bring me back to my country. So my children, they will never see the father again. And I started to hallucinate. And it was a very terrifying time. And I was listening to music on the Walkman. And there was this song that I repeatedly was listening. And that song saved me. It was a very beautiful Italian song. The song is called Sere Nere. That means dark nights. And it was exactly what it was. It were very dark nights, because those were my darkest nights. And the song I can send you, because I have your app number right now. I will send it to you later on. But yeah. Even if you cannot, I can send you the link of the YouTube video, which has the translation in English. So you can listen to the song in Italian, and then you see the lyrics in English, and then you understand why that song really saved me. But because music is really something else, huh?
Music is therapeutic. And I was going to say, even with writing a book, you know, there's another one from another country. This young man is from Nigeria, and he was a college student in Texas, and he got set up and served 22 years in prison on a wrongful conviction. And they sent him, as he got out, they deported him back, so he never got a chance to tell a story. So he is working on a book right now. Well, he's finished the book. He says he's waiting to have it published now. But situations like yours and his and others, they need to be discussed, and it needs to come out. But I find writing books is very therapeutic. I had a tragedy happen in my life years ago with my only loved one, and I wrote several books. I had several self-published. But the thing is, I found it very, very therapeutic after going back and looking them over. It doesn't even seem like you yourself wrote the book, because it's so...
I know.
Putting your heart into it and everything into it, and then you're looking back on it and saying, is this what I was holding in all these years? Mm-hmm. So I think what you're doing, Frank, is really awesome. And I want you to, and I know that you have to go to work this evening, but if you were to be running a prison right now, I'd like you to let the audience know how you would improve the incarceration system, the penal system.
Actually kind of easy. It's like, okay, just imagine I'm the warden of a new kind of prison, and I have to say, I get to say about what happens in that prison. Then I would have groups, sessions with prisoners to hear what their ideas are of the improvement, because I would listen to the prisoners themselves and write all the ideas. Of course, actually, within that the closed circuit of prison, I would also try to copy as much as possible the outside world. So instead of writing down a paper which you can order your groceries, there would be a store, a real life store on the premises, which the prisoners can go do shopping themselves. Other kind of work, for example, if you want to go to work as soon as you got out, then the possibility of to educate yourself to being, for example, to be a carpenter or to be a painter or a construction worker, they can also teach you that in prison. They should give the opportunity to do online studies, you know, any kind of study you want. And the state should contribute to that, because now they only the system right now is only making the criminals more creative. As soon as they get out, they're being so worked against that it's almost logical that they fall back into their old system of doing crime, because the system won't let them work. They don't accept them as full people, you know. Even right now, it's now 2024, almost 10 years I'm out. And only now, after 10 years, I'm still at the first step of the ladder. And all this time, all the 10 years, I was still standing on the ground. And now I'm just put my foot on the first step. At least it feels like that. So,
and the rehabilitation has been by you. So not so much the penal system, not so much the prison, but by you. You're the one that's making all the rehabilitation efforts.
Yeah, because I didn't allow myself to quit. I always told myself they will never have me back in that facility again, and I will do anything what's in my power to be somewhere where I can be proud of myself and people can also see me as an example. That's why, a short while ago, one of the broadcasting networks of the Netherlands is called RTL. They have the RTL News, and they wrote an article about me. It says, from gigolo to prisoner to, state.
Publisher.
Yeah, no, it's so... People who work for the state, how do you call them?
Government employees.
Wait, I have to search because some words I just don't I don't memorize what it means. Wait, that we say ambtenaar and
entrepreneur.
No, wait, no entrepreneurs on the name of wait ambtenaar here official.
Oh, prison official.
No, it's just a state official.
Oh, okay.
So people who work for the state, they, like the Ministry of Safety and Justice. I worked for the Ministry of Safety and Justice as a state official.
Oh, okay.
So that's quite a difference, huh? And, So, yeah, I think maybe I – do you think I exaggerate if I say that even the prisons should allow prisoners, not only, of course, there's a basketball court, there's a fitness room, you know, at least in Holland, but there should also be a swimming pool. Or like in Finland, they have a place where they can hang out, not for the whole day, but maybe in certain hours. They should at least go for an hour into a bar and have a drink.
I am so glad you're bringing this up, because one of the things I feel is a swimming pool, a spa, a nice gym. One of the things I found throughout my years as a social worker is that when people are going to, say they go to a spa and they go, they use the hot tub and they get to go outside and, you know, be around people, interact, it is so therapeutic. They're feeling so good about themselves. When someone feels good about themselves, they're not thinking about crimes. They're thinking about keeping themselves, their bodies clean. They're thinking about keeping their mental health stable.
Yes.
All of these things. These things, sometimes they're not allowed to enjoy these things prior to the crime. And then when they go to prison, they're not allowed to have it at all. But these are the therapeutic things. These are the things that make people feel so good about themselves and those around them. And you're talking about your own experiences, and you're talking about all the beautiful things that you have done as a result of your own mentality, your own, you know, your children. You kept your focus on the right things throughout. But they need to do something more for those that are incarcerated. But people stereotype. They look at all prisons as being alike, but there are so many thousands of people incarcerated that are either wrongfully convicted or they were victims before becoming an offender.
Yeah, and it's also like you just told me that you are a social worker. That's exactly what I'm going to study next February. I'm going to have a year education to be a social worker and to work with other people who have been in the same situation as I did, and just to give them a better perspective of the future, because I'm the living example of being, you know, so convinced of keeping myself, getting myself back on track. And even though I fell so many times, but the key of success is always to stand up once more than falling down, you know. So yeah, that's very important. And also I'm actually kind of curious, because I told you that one of my biggest passions is to speak out for schools, organizations, detention centers, prisons, and tell my story as a public speaker. It's my biggest wish in America.
If you were to put a proposal together, put something together that we can all distribute to these universities, to the courts, to wherever we have to distribute them, and let them know, putting down your contact information, put some kind of proposal together so we can get it out there.
You think that's possible? Because that is something that I really dream about. Because there was this woman, her name is Terry Bush. She is actually related to the Bush family. I'm not so fond of them actually, but she was actually related to the Bush family, and she once was trying to convince me to come to the United States and have me as a speaker over there. But at that time, it wasn't possible because of my rap sheet. It's very hard to get in to the United States, right? But I also thought that she just wanted to take advantage of me because of my gigolo past, you know, this woman maybe just wanted to lure me into her arms and, you know, take advantage of me. I don't know. I wasn't so attracted to her anyway, but She was talking about that. And I was thinking, well, right now, if I would be happy to put something on paper and to let you and your people distribute it in America, because I would be so, it would be like a dream come true just to accomplish that. And just to stand in front of those people who also, you know, can listen to somebody who's been in the same situation, then from not from America themselves, but from overseas, from Europe. And I guess also sometimes I think, well, the land of the opportunity is still America. Here in Holland, they are so small-minded actually, because I have to do so many work and put myself into difficult situation just to get my story being broadcasted or people being interested to work with me. And in America, I think if I put my story on the table, or I would translate my book into English, which I'm planning to do actually, to talk about that with my publisher. And I could distribute it in America and maybe even make somebody interested in maybe making a documentary or a short movie about it. Yeah, that is something that I think if you can dream it, you can achieve it. So yeah, I would really it would be a pleasure for me to put something on paper and to give it to you, and so you can see if something is possible.
I will send you the name and address of a woman in New York. She works or writes for the New York Times. She may be interested in it. But what I was going to say is the reason I find that your story is so unique coming from the Netherlands is, first, I want to thank, and I know he's not on with us today, but I want to thank Hans Dahl, the 27-year former warden, for bringing you to me, and also bringing Mariam Jacobs from the Netherlands, from bringing some of the others from the Dave and Marie from the Netherlands, who have also written books. But your story is so unique for one reason, because for many reasons. Because
is a good friend of mine.
And he's another one, very interested in, he's going to be on with us, I believe, in another week, he and Marieke. And that's another situation. Marieke is a police officer, and Dave is a former incarcerated, but they too have written a book, co-authored a book. But the reason your story is so, you mentioned that you want to be a social worker. And Frank, I'm going to say the ones that make the best social workers are the ones that have been there, done it, and overcame. You have everything. In the schools today, when they teach about social work, when people go to school for social work, they're not learning about the various cultures. You know, a lot of them are single. They don't have children. They've never been married. Yeah. They're prominent background. With you,
they just have their things about books. They just pass the test. You know, they just pass the test which they get in school, and that's it. They don't have any experience of life or, you know, all the social themes. No.
You have the package, the complete package, to make a perfect and excellent, excellent, excellent social worker. And I'll tell you, there's people who are substance abuse counselors who have done it. They've been there. They've the package deal. Those are the ones that have it. We have in this country, even our leadership in our government, we have people that have that piece of paper and that education, but they don't have a clue of how to help the people that they're servicing, that they're supposed to be leading. And it takes somebody who has been there and done it and has gone through all of these experiences to really make things work for the people they're trying to help.
True that. Yeah, it's sad but true. But that's something that I'm constantly writing about on LinkedIn. And that's a big problem here in Holland, because I worked at a closed youth section, you know, and there were all young people, young 20, people 21, 22 years old, and they had to, you know, they had to coach those youngsters between 12 and 18. 18 years is just 2-3 years younger than you are. How can you ever, you know, you educate those youngsters?
Well, they're still learning themselves.
Yeah, I've raised my two children plus their half brother, and I have raised them to be strong adults. You know, even though they experienced my prisons, which also damaged them, of course, but still,
it damaged them, but it also gave them some wisdom. Because I'm sure that they're not going to be so quick to judge those who are incarcerated when they know that the person could be innocent or could have been a good person before incarceration.
Yeah, but even though we're all people, we make sometimes we make bad decisions, you know. That doesn't make us bad. There are no bad people. People, they become bad of the circumstances, you know, where they were raised in. It's like everybody makes mistakes. Even the people who think they're the best, you know, they're just hiding skeletons in the closet because they never got caught, you know. And it's just because.
Not only do they never get caught, but as it says in the Bible, take the mote, remove the mote from your own eyes before you judge. And it's, you know, it's actually telling these people, look at yourselves before you judge others. And a lot of them, they judge others simply to get the focus off of themselves.
Yeah, if you point your finger in the direction of somebody else, always have three fingers pointing at you.
the thumb always faces you when you point your fingers. But Frank, I know that you have to work this evening, and I don't want to keep you. But I will say, you're going to be back on with us again, I believe, next week.
Yeah, I can do this every week if you want. I'm very pleased to be on this show. I was always, as a kid, well, no, not as a kid, but as a youngster, I always wanted to have my own radio program, like talk radio, that movie talk radio I really love. And my sister, she was with a radio jockey. And I really love radio. I just approached this. We have these bureaus, these agencies. They have voice actors, right? And I just applied for them because I want to be a voice actor as well for, you know, for movies and you know, child movies to do the voices, you know, like Eddie Murphy and all the known actors do that for those animation movies, those kind of things. And I really love to keep up my English because sometimes I feel, hey, what was that word again? Sometimes I have difficulties, but I believe that if I come frequently on the show, that my English will be better.
You know, actually the English is very, very good because even we in the United States don't speak proper English. The English people do from England, but we speak a slang. So anybody that comes on that has another language, bilingual or whatever, they're doing really good. And you've done an excellent job of speaking.
You.
But I will say you have an interesting story. And anytime, I don't know if you have a website up, but if you go on the internet and you look for free websites, you can design your own website and it won't cost anything.
Yeah, I'm planning to do so, but you know how it is that I have to get my priorities straight first, and because I'm still working on finding a steady job right now. Tomorrow, actually, I'm going to. I have to also to type in that name. That would be very funny because tomorrow I'm applying for a job. It's called Evgagor. As a probation officer.
Oh, really? You will make an excellent, excellent, excellent probation officer. That's what I'm talking about.
So everything what has to do with supporting people who are in prison or have been imprisoned, juvenile delinquents, everything what has to do with that. It has to become my specialty. Of course, yeah. Right now I'm working at the addiction compound.
Yeah.
And it's full every night. Because also those people, they need help. But my heart goes out to the thing that I have the most experience in, and that is the prison system.
Thank you,
Leona. I wanted to thank you also, and I'm going to send you an app. Franz, give me your number, and I'm going to send you an app or even an email with the information, so you can look it through when you finish. And keep in touch. Yes.
What I want to ask real quick, we have you coming on next Wednesday, and I wanted to ask you, would it be easier for you if we brought the time down a couple of hours so that it would be
This is good. I got to be honest with you. This is great because it's like I just totally forgot. It's that I wasn't even aware of the fact that it's already Wednesday because I work nights. I got just totally lose track of days, you know, that it's just because I'm still getting used to this, and it's just my fault. So this is great. This is good.
Anytime on a Wednesday, anytime you want to change the time, just let me know, because it's easier for me to change the time and make it more convenient for you. It's not going to harm, do anything to me or this scheduling of the show. So whatever's convenient for you, just let me know in advance and I can set it up that way.
Yeah, I will. I will. Thank you. Thank you a lot.
Audience, we are going to be closing this episode now. I want to thank Frank DeBrun one more time for being on with us. And I want to thank his family for allowing us to have this time with him that he's taken away from the family. But Frank, I want to thank you so much. You have such an interesting story and you have so much knowledge. And real quickly, what I wanted to say, if you do this job as a probation officer, one of the things we have in the country, in the United States, is that a lot of these people that do come out of prison, when they do get jobs, their probation officers are expecting them to meet with them like every week or every other week. And it takes from them. So it makes it more difficult for them when they're working, especially coming out of prison and being able to get a job. So as a probation officer, I'm sure Frank, you will do this, but I'm hoping that probation officers in the U.S.
The job that I will be getting is like, it's for the probation office, but it's like, they have work sentences, right? Like if you have, they don't send you to jail, but they let you work for the community. And And I just have to, you know, I have to be there and take care of everything is being done well. So I'm just sort of a correctional officer.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. We will hear more from Frank next Wednesday, same time, 2:00 Eastern Daylight Time and 8:00 in the Netherlands time. So please join us Wednesday, same time, to hear more from Frank DeBrun.
Thank you. God bless America.
Thank you so much. And you have a good evening. Get some rest.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.